This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are about to take my magic carpet, Southwest Airlines, on the way to Burbank, California. Yeah, I know that's a little ways away. Actually, it's a long ways away from the Queen Mary there in Long Beach. I could fly straight into Long Beach, but I'm going to be staying in L.A. for about 10 days or longer, almost about 2 weeks, roughly, and I'm going to be attending the this week, today, tomorrow, and Thursday will be the Magic Collectors Expo there on the Queen Mary. And I'm excited about that. And then I'm going to hang around for a few more days, go to the castle, hopefully get a chance to chat with a few people to record some upcoming episodes. And then going to be hanging around for the Magic Award, Magic Castle Awards, the Academy of Magical Arts Awards ceremony that's going to be on Friday the 17th. So that way I will report from there on the award ceremony. That should be just a lot of fun, where I'll be receiving a special fellowship award. I'm so thankful for that. Anyhow, I wanted to let you know I'm here. Unfortunately, again, I'm in Austin, which means there's no Dunkin' Donuts here. In fact, I can't find really a donut place that has what I want or like, and I'm going to have to find a Starbucks. I'm still trying to find my way around since I have moved to Austin. Part of the problem is it's a long way from where I used to live in Houston near the airport. It was only about 20 minutes away from me there. Now it's well over an hour away with no traffic. So anyhow, got to get used to that then as well. But I'm really, again, looking forward to the Collectors Expo. I reported on that for the last several years. I've been attending that. Bill Smith puts together a really great lineup. And I know this year that Lance Rich, as in the past, has given some great presentations. And he's got something planned for us here this year then as well as some other people who are going to be giving some presentations. Looking forward to seeing a lot of my friends I only really see at this particular convention, like Charles Green III and some others. So we'll have a chance to chat with them. Anyhow, I'm going to be reporting on today's activities, which don't begin until about 4 o'clock. By the time that I get into Burbank, it's about 2 o'clock, and then it's going to be probably about a two-hour drive to get down to Long Beach from there, just because of L.A. traffic, and it's on the south side of L.A., and plus it's L.A., bad traffic. And then trying to get back to in a few days, and going to stay at the Magic Castle Hotel, and be staying there for a while. So anyhow, a lot of stuff going on, and I appreciate you coming along with me for the ride. I hope you enjoy this particular episode that is going to be a report on the day one and two of the convention, and then we'll be posting day three coming up here soon. So continue to tune in for the next episode. And also, I'm looking forward to talking with some people, and I don't know who it's going to be, who's going to be on the mic, but whoever it is, it'll be spectacular. So, again, about time to get on my magic carpet here shortly. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. The convention has begun, and actually, we are pretty much finished with most of the activities here for the day and or for the evening. It started this afternoon at 4 o'clock. I was running a little bit late because of traffic. By the time that I got from the airport to the airport, from the airport to here, it was a couple-hour drive from Burbank to Long Beach. As you know, Dane, it's a long way. And so I missed the first talk this afternoon. I guess it was with Mike Caveney. We'll talk a little bit about that. But first of all, I wanted to chat with my friend and yours, Dana Daniels, who is here. And he gave a nice talk about Disneyland. Hello, Dana.
Hello, Scott.
It's great to see you again. And this that was a really interesting thing. You had talked on our podcast last time about some of the stories and everything.
Yeah.
But you gave some more insight. I thought it was pretty funny. Some interesting stories there.
Yeah, I have a lot of stories. I was there, you know, on and off 19 years and started out as a character in a character department when I was in high school. And so.
Played all the tall ones, you said.
All the tall ones. The Bears, Goofy, Tigger, Captain Hook, and Big Bad Wolf, and. And this had a lot of, you know, I try to remember all the funny stories. I, you know, would write them down. And
Have you thought about putting together a book or a booklet or a lecture?
You know, I got to do that. Everyone asked me I should put a book together. So that's, maybe that'll happen.
After all those years, there's got to be a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then, you know, the whole time in the character department, you know, I wanted to be a magician in the park, but they didn't have magicians. And so I was constantly trying to convince them of that. And saw Wally Bogue in the horseshoe. And I said, well, that was the closest thing to a magician. So I thought, I want to be that guy. And then so I kind of talked about how I got that gig. After Wally retired, they hired a guy and I became his understudy. But I used to sneak magic tricks on set and do them as Goofy. And they would tell me, that's great, but don't do it because the other Goofies can't do that. You know.
I thought that was a funny story also you were sharing here when you were a bear and you were taking a break.
Baloo the bear from Jungle Book. And I snuck out in the Jungle Cruise where the lions eat the zebras. And I hid behind a tree. And then when the boat come out, I sneak out and I would put my arm in the lion's mouth and act like I was getting eaten up. And then the captains would crack up and... And then one of them came by and shot me 5 times with a blank gun. And so I rolled around the ground. And I thought, I am so fired because I wasn't supposed to be out
there. This was on your break.
This was on my break. Yeah. I just did a half-hour set. I came up and I went, what's up here? Go up there. Oh, let's play here. Was there for 30 minutes. Then I was like, oh, I have to get back on set for my next. So I was in that costume for 90 minutes straight. And let me tell you, it's not air conditioned. But I had a blast. I thought I was going to get fired, and I never did. I don't think the captains said anything.
But your boss said something to you.
Well, the boss, my lead, he saw me when I came out, and I had dirt all over me. My head is like about a foot above the Baloo head. I'm looking out through the neck, you know. And so but apparently, because I rolled on the ground because I got shot, I had dirt all over me. And he was like, what happened to you? And I'm like... I don't know. And, you know, I made up something.
And the captains never reported you?
No, I think they just had a blast. It was something different from what they're used to, you know? And so.
Well, see, now those kinds of stories and things that you had lived and witnessed. Yeah. And if also you got a lot of friends who are still around and young enough to tell these kinds of stories, so it would not just be Dana Daniels stories, you know, but there'll be other guys who will say, oh, I used to be stuck by kids with pins.
Oh, whatever, no. There's tons of good character stories and stuff like that. Yeah.
I mean, if Disney would let that book be written.
They don't like that.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. They don't like you posting pictures of you with your head off online, although I have. Because I'm not there. They can't fire me. but if you worked there and did that, you're fired.
You're out.
Yeah. But there was no internet when I was doing it. Yeah. But
and you weren't supposed to talk either as a character, right?
You were not. If you're in a costume, like if you're a face character, Snow White, Alice, they can talk, of course. You know. But yeah, if you're in the costume, you're not allowed to talk. And that apparently in the early years, they did. But then they changed it because one of the original Mickey Mouse guys was a guy named Paul Castle. Walt Disney hired him. And Paul had a voice like this.
Nothing like
Mickey. And he could not do a Mickey Mouse voice. So apparently he'd be out there. They go, hi, Mickey. And he goes, hey, how you doing? And so they just kind of said, okay, no one can talk. Yeah. But I used to do private events. They would send me out in private events. And then I go to a hospital. I could go on my own time if I wanted to with some other characters.
Yeah.
We could check out the costumes and go to Chalk Hospital and visit the kids.
But not on behalf of Disney. This was just on
your
own.
No, it's because, I didn't get paid. But it was on behalf of Disney. It was just like, we just explained what we're going to do.
It's a donation.
And they had they would send a lead with us and all that.
I see.
Make sure we're not, you know, walking around downtown wearing this, you know, Goofy costume. So, but I would do magic tricks as Goofy. I put a whole magic show together and I would do it for Chalk Hospital as Goofy. And then I asked my lead, I said, can I talk as Goofy? Because I did a pretty decent Goofy voice. And they said, yeah, here you can. So I did a whole magic show talking as Goofy, doing tricks.
Can you still do Goofy? Listen to me here.
Oh, boy. Hey, hi, kids. Hi, Mickey.
That is pretty good.
Yeah.
I like
that. I haven't done that in a long time. So,
did you ever put together a magic book? I mean, like Goofy Tricks or something?
No.
That would be kind of a cool thing. That's, you know, be a Disney magic kind of a book that the characters that Goofy and others could.
Well, Disney marketing probably would do something like that.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, speaking of marketing, of course, now you got the Wally Bogue book. Is this a new thing or tell me about
it? No. Well, this came out when Wally was still alive in his final years. A guy named Gene Sands helped him write this, and it's his life story. It's called Wally Bogue, the Crown Prince of Disneyland. Clown Prince of Disneyland. And it's a great book. And
I remember the last time that we talked, you were saying that how much he had influenced Steve Martin. with his balloons and comedy.
Steve Martin, he worked at Disneyland when he was 10 years old, selling maps at the front gate because he lived in Garden Grove.
Okay.
And then later on, when he got a little older, worked in the magic shop. And his dream was to work in the Golden Horseshoe, to be Wally Bogue, you know, his understudy. And I think he tells a story of that. In fact, when Wally passed away, we had a big celebration of life for Wally at the park. And Steve couldn't be there. He wanted to be, but he sent in a video and he talked about how when he was 10 years old and he would watch Wally over and over and over again, he knew every line, every punchline, and he knew the timing. And he just hoped that one day, this is what he said. I hope one day, I was just wishing one day they would say, our comedian has a cold and he can't go on. Is there a 10-year-old boy out there who can come up on stage and fill in, you know, and, so I worked Milt Larson's club out in
Malibu.
No, it's in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica.
Yeah, sorry. Before it closed. It was just before COVID. And when
did
I
that ever reopened, by the way?
No, it never did.
Sorry, another subject.
When I got there, Milt said Steve Martin's coming in tonight. Apparently, he lives in Santa Monica area. And I was like, really? Okay. And then so I did the show. And then afterwards, he stuck around and he talked to me and he actually wrote a joke for me for one of my tricks, you know, a punchline. And it was great. And I still use it today. And then he said, I told him, I said, you know, I used to do, after Wally retired, I did the comedian in the Golden Horseshoe Review. And he was like, really? I always wanted to do that part. And I said, well, I'm sorry your career didn't go the way you thought it would, you know. And then he started going, did you do this joke? Did you do that joke? You know all of Wally's jokes. He still does. And I go, yeah, I did that joke. I didn't do that one. And because I did a lot of my own stuff too, you know. And but that was it was a nice make a little connection with him on that, you know. And he got a big kick out of that.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, it was a really interesting thing because we are here aboard the Queen Mary and we're in near where, how far is Disneyland from here? Probably about 10 miles, 15 miles?
No. It's probably about 30, 35 miles.
Oh, that's further away than I thought.
Yeah, okay. It's Anaheim. Yeah. We're in, yeah. Mm-hmm. I grew up here in Long Beach and made that drive many times.
Do you ever think about joining the Mystics?
Really? Tell me more about them.
Yeah,
what's the dues?
Which is another thing I understand. They're going to be reprising the Mystics Act here.
We're going to do a little Mystic show. I believe it's tomorrow night or Thursday night.
Well, the cool thing was, as I recall, I was at the 1986 IBM convention that was here on board.
Yeah.
And I saw that show. Now, was that the one when Michael Weber was doing in the ballet and the tutu, or was that a different show?
You know what? I don't remember what we did. I think I was in that show as well. Was our show here in the Queen Mary? I thought it was over at the convention center.
It was at the convention center.
Yeah.
It was, I'm saying here.
Yeah, it was Randy Pryor and Michael Weber did the two. I'm pretty sure they did it because that was their thing back then. Yeah. So, and it was hilarious.
It was.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. I'm hoping he'll do that again.
I did it with Randy. We did a Mystic show in Las Vegas one year.
Okay. For Magic Live.
No, it wasn't Magic Live. It was for another convention, PCM convention or something like that. No.
That was Magic Expo, or what was that called?
And it was at the Trop, I think.
Is that the thing that Craig put together? International IXP or something like that?
I don't remember.
Anyhow.
Anyways. So they wanted Michael and Randy to do the straitjacket escape ballet, and Weber wasn't available.
Hmm.
So they asked.
Dana was.
They asked if I would do it, and I said absolutely.
Yeah.
And I have a whole new respect for that. Was so hard because they were doing real ballet dancing, and I, you know. Consider myself a pretty good dancer, but I've never done that kind. But to do it in a straitjacket, and escape at the same time was exhausting.
I'll bet that it
was. That was, and it was fun though. Yeah, yeah. So I did it.
A one-off thing that you don't do regularly.
No, I did one time, one and done.
Well, again, this is a great convention. I mentioned earlier that I missed the 4:00. Tell me, did you hear about Michael's lecture, Mike Caveney's lecture today?
I missed part of it, and I saw the ending of it, though.
Okay.
Yeah, it was great.
There were a couple of other things. I mean, I know we've had Jim Connolly was talking about Dante here this
that
evening.
That was great.
That was,
yeah.
I thought, very interesting, yeah, and entertaining. I mean, that's something we never heard before.
Jim Connolly, when I was a kid, I saw he used to come to Mystics and show his films a couple times a year,
yeah,
of old magicians and stuff like that. So that's how I knew.
And then, of course, Lance Rich just kind of knocked it out of the park with his great PowerPoint presentation.
What a presentation that was. The video and everything. Wow, yeah, the music. And it was just...
I was expecting nothing less. I mean, after last year that he, yeah, did that great thing about Vegas.
They didn't really know how, yeah, to do it. Yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful.
So anyhow, thank you very much, Tana. I appreciate your time. And
I'm
looking forward to seeing you more during this convention.
Right.
And you're just getting started here, too.
I believe so. Yeah.
Sounds forward. Like it. So this is a lot of fun. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, I was Dana Daniels, Scotty out. As expected, one of the talks that we had this evening was something that we knew, I knew it was going to be fantastic, and it not only met, but again, exceeded my great expectations, and that was Lance Rich, who I've got with me right now. Hey, Lance.
Hi, Scott.
Very good.
Thank you.
Because last year, you put together this great one that was about Las Vegas, which turned into a book.
Right. That was, well, kind that was of a couple of years ago, that
it was,
one was.
It was,
yes,
a couple of years ago,
yeah,
and that was something that Bill Smith said he had recommended to you, and then it's just after you started doing more research, or what was the story on that?
Yeah, so Bill said, hey, can you do this talk on you know, magic and all the magicians who performed in Las Vegas? And I said, sure. I mean, because one, I love Las Vegas. I mean,
who doesn't?
It's been a lifelong love affair. You know, I've always been passionate about Las Vegas. So he said that, and it grew into this talk that was very well received. That was in 2021. And because of that talk and all the research that had preceded that talk, Joshua Jay, who was in the audience, said, hey, can you do this?
Well, that,
Magic Fest.
Well, no, he said, can you turn this into a book?
Oh, a book. Okay.
Yeah. He said, can you turn it into a book? And so it became Neon Dreams, and, which I guess we launched it officially at Magic, or well, early really at Magic Live.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke there and we sold out of the stock we had there. And then we, came back and, we did a launch in November of last year, and it's just, I'm very proud of it, and it's gotten some great reviews so far. So the Genie review, that was pretty great. That was pretty great to be reviewed in Genie, you know, and
favorably,
positively. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So,
and so this year you put together another one that completely, since we're on the Queen Mary, and you put together something that was called Neptune's
Sorcerers, an adventure in three acts, I called it, but Neptune Sorcerers, as it turns out, and I wouldn't say not everything in the talk was about the Queen Mary, just the third part of it, really. But, you know, as we know, there are tons and tons of magicians who work cruise ships
right
now.
Well, that's where I thought you were going with this.
And so this is all about really before the 1970s when
the big boom,
when the big boom of pleasure cruises happened.
Yeah, with Ron Wilson kind of booking everybody. And
so this is mostly transatlantic passages and that sort of thing. And as it turns out, the Queen Mary here, which, you know, I mean, the ship launched in 1936 and was at sea until 1967. But in the mid-50s, there was this little club called Neptune Sorcerers, which is where I got the name of this club, magic club, if you will, that was on board here. And so I thought that was kind of cool. And that they gave me the name. And but then we told some other stories. I told some other stories.
I thought it was
too
interesting about some of the people who were working those transatlantic crossings, including John Ramsay.
Yeah. So John Ramsay.
Cardinian.
John Ramsay was on the very first transatlantic crossing, the very first voyage of the Queen Mary. And he was headed to Batavia, New York for the IBM convention.
Wow.
which is kind of funny because the IBM keeps coming up in the story. Let's see. Somebody, I forget who it was in like 1958. They were going to the IBM convention when it was in Buffalo. It was all those New York dates, it seems like.
Yeah.
But they were going to Buffalo. And then the IBM convention was actually held on board here. Were you here for that?
I was in 1986. In fact,
yeah, you were here.
No, okay. I was here.
Okay.
And I remember it so distinctly for a variety of reasons. One was it was over the 4th of July weekend, and my wife and I were sitting out on the bow of the ship watching the fireworks at night, watching all the sailboats and thinking, it's freezing cold. We had to go back to our room and get some blankets. 4th of July was so cold.
Wow.
Also, I think Doug Henning was performing. But he was on a Monday night because it ran through the weekend over through the 4th and like that. And I was just booked to work the Magic Castle for the whole week. And I started on Monday, so I had to leave and I didn't get to see him perform here.
And of course, that convention, the shows were at, I think, the Terrace Theater here in town. They weren't actually on board.
Correct.
But tonight we got to see, in fact, I got to introduce Guy Hollingworth.
So classical.
And it's just this perfect environment. And first of all, Guy Hollingworth is a huge, you should talk to him. He can tell you this, but he's a huge ocean liner aficionado.
Well, yeah.
He loves this stuff, but he's never performed on board here. So
it's gonna be a dream come true.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got to introduce him, and it was we did it in a way that was like this segue, that sort of place setting segue where, you know, I kind of ended the talk and then had this little addendum and tried to set this scene and set this place that says, you know, I want you, you know, imagine it's 1930 something and here you are, you know.
And the music plays.
Yeah. So
and it segued perfectly into that. And it's like we're in the mood right then. And
that's great.
Yeah. He really knocked it out of the park. I mean, he's got such a beautiful act. And it was nice because he was just working at the Magic Castle last week, I guess, with John Gaughan and Mike Cavey on the palace. And so he stuck around for this and it was great.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well,
it's a great act.
Congratulations again. A nice presentation. Are you going to make it into a book or a booklet or some sort of a?
Oh, I don't know. We'll see about something like that. I mean, I've said no several times to that, but I said this actually in the thing, in the talk. It's the middle section was about kind of damned voyages, you know, things that haven't gone so good. And specifically, I talked about Nicola, but that could fill a book. All of these stories.
Well, just like Carter's did for Mike Cavney about.
All of these stories of stuff at sea that goes wrong. I mentioned
John Calvert.
John Calvert has had, there are many, but like Will Wood, Chop Chop and Charlene, those two were almost in the talk, but I just didn't have time for it.
Yeah. Because you had to share that time with others. It was a fairly short talk, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was
about 25 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right at that.
And it felt like it was only 10. I mean, you know, it's like we could hear more. And as always, I thought like the presentation that you were using, the PowerPoint, or is that a different?
I use Keynote.
Keynote. I was going to say it looked like Keynote because it's got a lot more things than what PowerPoint does.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Well, thank you.
Anyhow, Lance, congratulations. I can hardly wait to see what you're going to be doing next with your life because you continue to reinvent yourself and make some great things that are good contributions to our community. So thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Lance Rich. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Scott.
Buddy out. Well, we were talking with Dana Daniels a little bit earlier and also about the Long Beach Mystics. And I think it's important we kind of, at least I'm sure we're going to be talking to more than one or two here this week as we continue to go on. But one of the people I just ran into here in the dealer's room is Les Arnold, who was also a Long Beach Mystic back in the day. Hello, Les.
That's right. I mean, hey, I joined the Mystics. Well, let's see. The club started in 1955 and I joined in 1959. So. Yeah. Anyway, and there's at least a dozen guys here today that are all ex-Long Beach Mystics.
And you also were a builder of a lot of the illusions that the guys used, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They came to you with ideas?
Yeah, we put on shows, built the It's Amazing sign for our annual show and illusions. So all the equipment that I use, I build.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I understand that the Mystics are going to be doing kind of a reprise of what they did in 86.
Some of it.
Are you going to be doing anything?
Yeah, I'll be on that show. Okay, and that's cool. Thursday.
Yeah.
So
now the difference then was, of course, that we went to a different theater, but here everything's going to be on board, basically. And again, back in 86, the IBM convention, we went to another theater nearby.
But. Yeah, it was across the pond here on the mainland. And that's it's where the old auditorium used to be. It's a beautiful theater. Pacific Terrace Theater.
We're here on the Queen Mary, which days gone by, things have changed. And the same thing like with conventions, particularly the IBM and others. What we used to, particularly in the IBM and the SAM also, love to have theatrical experiences. And so we would book these theaters, but it's got to be more and more expensive with busing people to the places, plus the union fees and everything else we have to pay for using theaters. And unfortunately, we just don't do that anymore.
Well, hey, that was a great convention back then.
It was.
You had Doug Henning on it and some real big headliners.
Yeah.
And it was in the beautiful theater, the Pacific Terrace Theater. And they had four shows. And of course, they had buses to take people over there.
Right.
So you're right. It's yeah. changed a little bit.
So are you still building anything, by the way?
Occasionally, not currently. Right now, it's yeah. just having fun with the grandkids.
They just like to keep your hand at it, I know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. You know how it gets. The yep. older you get, you want to keep, have a reason to get up. But
sure.
there, I don't have any projects
yeah.
in the fire specifically.
Yeah.
I'd finished a few.
Anything that you're going to be doing on TV anytime soon?
Or? Well, we just appeared back east at Hilton Head at Kerry Pollack's Magic and Comedy deal. It's a great little theater that he put together there, and that was wonderful.
Was your granddaughter with you on that show or not? I thought I saw a picture of her on Facebook.
Yeah. She did not perform. She went on the vacation. We made a vacation, took the whole family, and then Alex and I performed. So, yeah, we had a great time. And he has a wonderful theater. If you get in that area, you got to go and see his show. It's really terrific.
Well, I talked with Carrie last fall when we were at Magic on the Beach, I believe it was. It was in Charles Box Theater, and Carrie is one of the performers. We were talking about his show over there at Hilton Head. So it's a really great show, I understand. Great theater.
Well, anything he does is really great.
Of course it is.
And I'll tell you another thing. He's building a little tiki room that's a bar with a little theme to where
guys... They're at Hilton Head in his bar?
Yeah. It's not far from the theater.
Oh.
And, you
it's
know,
a separate building. It's separate.
It's going to be open late. It's a separate building, and you can go have drinks and see some close-up magic and stuff like that. So it's going to be quite a little venue because a lot of the stuff there... You know, it's an older retirement type of place that things close down quite early.
Why do I know that?
So he's gonna cash in on being one of the few, if not the only places.
I live in the Del Webb facility in Georgetown. Okay.
There you
and
go.
Like there's a sports bar, quote, sports bar that I have gone to and I watch a game. And by 8 o'clock, it's pretty busy. 8:30, people are starting to file out. 9 o'clock, the game's still going on, maybe halftime or something. The place is about to close down.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, I look around, what is, okay, well.
A different feeling.
It is.
I get it.
So, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And the Mystics, the Long Beach Mystics that a lot of people know about, was here in Long Beach. And so there's quite a few of us here at this convention.
Yeah, we can't do a convention here without honoring you guys.
Yeah, so therefore, Thursday night show will be a Mystic
awesome.
Show.
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
Well, Les, thanks very much for your time. Always
You're
good
welcome.
To see you.
Have a great time here.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Les Arnold. Scotty, out. Let me get a quick... I mentioned earlier that I was delayed in getting here and as a result missed the 4 o'clock talks, I should say, because plural, we had more than one. But the one of the talks was with Mike Caveney, and he's with me then right now to kind of give us a recap, I hope. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Scott. So here's what I talked about. Since we're not that far from my home in Pasadena, Bill asked me if I could bring down the greatest hits or a representative bunch of stuff from Egyptian Hall Museum. I said, sure. So tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to set up this museum, and I picked things that I think you can't see any place else on Earth except in Egyptian Hall, really rare stuff. So I realized that not everybody knows. They think Egyptian Hall is only that old theater in London.
Hmm.
So I explained the history of America's Egyptian Hall from 1895 up to the present.
And that it was owned by and in the house of, what was the guy's name over there in Tennessee?
Price.
David Price. Yeah.
Yep. It was David Price that turned it into the largest collection of lithographs in the world.
Yeah.
And when he died, George Daly and I purchased it, divided it between us, and now, I'm now the keeper of the name, Egyptian Hall.
What about George Daly then? Does he have part of the Egyptian Hall, would you say, in his house?
Well, he did. He had half of it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he sold it to the museum up in Canada, McCord Museum.
Okay.
So they now have one of the greatest magic collections on Earth.
That is open to the public.
Yeah.
As opposed to yours is private or David's private.
Well, yeah. I probably get more visitors than the McCord does, but yeah.
I will be here for the next 10 days. I'd love to come by.
And I'm going to be in Egypt for the
next
10 days.
That's right. I heard you're not even going to be at the banquet.
No.
I mean, at the ceremony.
Show, I know.
So I will thank you now.
Okay. It's killing me.
I know. That's because, what Gay was telling me.
Yeah. It's going to be great. It's sold out. The award show is sold out. The two public shows the next day are sold out.
I heard the acts are going to be tremendous.
It's going to be stuff we don't see.
Did Chuck Martinez book, or who was the booker?
Chuck booked put the whole thing together.
Okay. Yeah, he was saying there are a lot of foreign acts that he was bringing over for this that you don't see any other times.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic.
And so so you had some artifacts, and you're going to have a room here tomorrow, or are you going to bring some things over?
Yeah, they're here, and I'll set them up tomorrow morning.
Okay. Who were the other speakers this afternoon?
Well, Bill spoke, and tonight we had Tom Conley.
That's right. Well, I thought it was Jim. Was it Tom Conley?
It was Tom Conley talking about his father, Jim Conley.
Jim was his dad, sorry.
Yeah, and the Mystics knew Jim well because he was a secret weapon for the Mystics. Back in the old days, whenever we'd have a meeting and we didn't have anything planned, we'd call Jim and say, hey, you want to bring some film over? He'd pack up his projector and come to our meeting and show movies of Keough and, fantastic Tahani. Really great guy.
Wow. Well, I had not heard anything about Jim Conley before.
Well, you'll see a bunch of film tomorrow.
Oh, good. Okay. Because I heard them saying they were going to be showing some film, but I didn't know how much of that. But also the different tales he was telling, Tom was telling about that, and the Dante Ranch, and how, you know, he was like, Dante was like his second family, I guess.
It's unbelievable that Tom, who's almost my age, bounced on Dante's knee, which I find amazing.
I thought it was funny. He said he bounced on Moyo's knee.
He did, on Moyo's knee too, which is even more amazing.
And he had a pinup of her picture.
I thought that was fantastic.
Well, yeah. So anyhow, thank you very much
for
putting this help. Are you helping at all with Mike, or are you just kind of
with Bill? Excited?
I mean, Bill.
This is Bill's deal.
Yeah.
Bill gets all the credit.
Yeah, he's been doing a yeoman's job. Every time I
have.
Talk with him, it's like, I can't talk right now. I'm busy. I'm between this and that. He talked to me Thursday.
I know.
So, I know he's busy. Mike, thanks very much.
All right, Scott.
Good talking to you. This is the Magic Word Podcast. And that was Mike Caveney. Scotty out. We're now on the second day, and this is a full day, and a lot of stuff is going to be going on here this morning. In fact, I'm sitting here at breakfast with a couple of guys we'll chat with in a second, but we were just talking about how that Mike Caveney is not going to be available because he's going to be going to Egypt. Coincidentally enough, he's going to be having part of his collection from the Egyptian Hall of Magic on display, which is going to be at the room right next to us. And as I'm looking down there, there's Michael walking right into the room to get things ready, I guess, right now. But the couple of gentlemen I got with me right now are disparate from the standpoint of being so far apart geographically. In Houston, Texas, I've got a guy who is my fellow traveler. We just got back from France together, Mr. Dick Olson. Hey there, Dick.
Good morning, Scotty.
And the another gentleman who I see all the time at magic conventions, all the major ones, it seems like. And he is, I just was referring to him this morning as the peripatetic, what I say? Now I'm tongue-tied. The peripatetic prestidigitator. And here he is. That's going to be then Peter Rogers. So hello, Peter.
How are you, Scott?
Fantastic. So you guys have come from different parts of the world, I mean, and everything. And I do see you, Peter, again, from time to time. And you're saying your next convention is going to be Magical. Are you going to be going to the IBM convention? So
the IBM first, and then a few weeks later, Magic Live, yes.
I assume that you select conventions not only by their size, but also their closeness since you're going to be traveling so far.
Yes, that's right. I try to get to Magic Live each year and whatever near that, and if I can make another trip, which is what I'm doing now.
And you've come to this like about every year then also for the past several years.
No, this is the first.
Well, this is your first one of these.
First one of these. First Magic Expo I've been to, yes.
Wow. You've come to a good one over here because this is just ideal. This is cool. Now, you say you came on Monday, so you had a chance to kind of walk around the ship.
I walked around the ship on Monday, explored it a bit, probably missed half the good things, but you know, I did it on my own, so I just wandered around.
Yeah. And did you go off campus or off site of the ship, or did you stay here the whole time? Or
no, since I've been on the ship, that I haven't left the ship.
Okay. I didn't know if you had a rental car or when you did. Did you fly into Long Beach, or did you come in?
No, I've been to the Magic Castle for 4 nights before. So
Magic Castle Hotel over there. Okay. So you got to see John Gaughan and Guy Hollingworth and Mike Caveney on the stage.
Yes, yes. It was a great show. It was a spectacular show.
Yeah. John doesn't perform there very often, and he was doing his Antonio, I believe.
He did Antonio, and then he did an illusion at the end where the girl just vanished off on stage.
What? What? Tell me about that.
It was supposed to be the illusion that Houdini was doing in 1925, and they reconstructed it, and he performed it on the stage at the Magic Castle this last week.
Wow.
I don't know what it's called, but it was great illusion.
Well,
in the Palace of Mystery show, which included Guy Hollingworth and Mike Caveney. And
who was the MC? Did Mike MC?
Mike Caveney MC'd it.
Yeah.
Did his juggling of the cup of coffee routine and his bow and arrow routine.
Right. And Guy Hollingworth, I assume, did the routine he did here last evening. That was his manipulation.
Did that act, yes, which is perfect for doing on the ship.
Oh.
But, you know, he's been rehearsing it all week at the Magic Castle.
Well, from what I understand, I'm talking to Lance Rich, that he was saying, because Lance got to MC the show, or I'd say the show, he was the only performer really last night, but as he was introducing him, he was saying, of course, this was something that was kind of a lifelong dream for him to be working on this particular cruise, because this, I think, was built in Scotland, and they were talking about how John Ramsay, I think, was the first performer that was coming over.
Yes, yes. That was an interesting bit of information, that John Ramsay performed on this ship. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Especially because Andrew Galloway died only a week or two ago, that wrote up all about John Ramsay. So that was interesting bit of information.
Yeah, ironic timing on that. And it was, I'm sure, a fantastic show, the fact that those guys were together. And something is a little bit different, a little bit of comedy with Mike and the very classic magic than of what that guy was putting together, and then, of course, with what John Gaughan was doing. And I haven't seen John here. I'm assuming he will, or did I see him? Yes, I did. He was at dinner last night. He was slamming across the room. There were a lot of people here. I think we've got a couple hundred people or so.
Yeah, I think so.
So you're going to be coming again in the future?
Maybe. Probably, yeah. I'm very impressed this time. So if it's at the right time of year, I'll probably come.
Well, we were talking earlier about when it was in Las Vegas, and that was a lot of fun. And Dick, the last year was in Cleveland, and the year before that, I believe, was in Las Vegas.
I think, actually, the last year, the previous year, was in Austin, and then Las Vegas was the year before that.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is a great convention to come to really learn new things, and especially
old things.
And especially old things.
Yeah, see us old guys.
Yeah. Being that I was born and raised in Las Vegas, when Lance Rich did his presentation of Magic in Las Vegas, in the Las Vegas collectors thing, it was truly heartfelt to me to be able to hear that. So
what did you think of his presentation last night?
Oh, he knocked it out of the room for sure. You know, not only the facts that he provides and the fact that it's so well researched, but just the way he presents it. You know, making it exciting and easy to listen to. So it was a highlight.
It was a highlight, and that was just the first night. We still got more to go.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff coming yet to date.
I'm kind of anxious to go and take a peek in the room right next to us over here to see what Mike has got for us.
Me too. Knowing that there was going to be a Long Beach, I expected that we would see a lot more about the Mystics, and I don't think we're going to be disappointed from what
I think. You're right. So far, it's interesting. Of the few people I've spoken with, three of them have been Mystics.
Yes, that's wonderful.
So everybody's a Mystic. Look around here, it seems like they are.
Right.
You have seen the Long Beach Mystics, I think, perform by Magic Live maybe a couple other times.
Yes. You know, Stan Allen likes to bring them along to Magic Live, so, and I'm sure they're going to be here.
Yeah.
Later on in the...
Now, Dick and I were late getting here, and I know that Mike Caveney was a speaker yesterday. He did talk about the Egyptian Hall. Who else was on then yesterday afternoon, you recall, or what was it that we missed? Putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, that's... I'm too old for this.
All righty, we just took a quick pause to look at the program. So who was it that we had?
Well, Bill Smith
welcomed
everyone and spoke a little bit about previous expos and what was happening. And David Sandy ran a little bit of a quiz, not about magic. It was about just linking famous people with the first magic kits that they got as a child.
And then Mike Caveney wrapped it up with his Egyptian Hall artifacts.
Yeah. Mike Caveney spoke about how he purchased David Price.
It's and George Daly kind of split the thing.
History of Egyptian Hall.
Yeah. A lot of history here and a lot of history buffs, and that's what this really is all about. And I will get to talk with Bill Smith later. Every year, whenever I talk with him, he always says, not right now, talk to me after it's over, because he is just running like a chicken with his head cut off until at the end when he can finally take a breath. But we will talk with him later tomorrow. What day is today? Today's the second day, so it'll be tomorrow on the third day that we'll visit with him by now. Peter, thanks very much for your time. Good talking to you, buddy.
Thanks, Scott.
Look forward to seeing you throughout the rest of the convention, but also in Las Vegas. And Dick, you'll be going to Vegas as well.
Absolutely, Scott. I can't wait.
It's going to be a lot of fun, but this is something I just can hardly wait for each moment to happen. We live by moments, don't we?
Absolutely, and we certainly have been able to share a few of them here in the last month.
Yep, we have. We just got back from France together, and it was great. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Peter Rogers and Dick Olson and Scotty out. We haven't really had a chance to speak with many of the dealers who are here. And the dealers, of course, at the Magic Collectors Expo cover the gamut from old stuff to old stuff, even older stuff. And most of the dealers themselves are older guys then too, and gals. And one of them is a longtime friend of mine who you've heard on the podcast many times in the past. And we've even done episodes with him back when we had the Houdini.
2012, I think?
Yeah, the seance, the official Houdini seance in 2012. That's right. Here he is, Arthur Moses. Hello, Arthur.
Hi, welcome everybody.
So, you are selling some stuff, and last year I got a couple of these stoppers, the Houdini stoppers,
right,
which, by the way, I recommend for people even if you finish the whole bottle, it's still a cool little stopper that is essentially the bust head of Harry Houdini.
Right.
You got them both in silver and bronze.
Yes.
And a very inexpensive, what are they, like 20 bucks or something?
30 bucks.
30 bucks, 30 bucks?
30 bucks.
So, since they're not here... People who are not here, if they want to order one, could they get one from you?
Sure.
By going to where?
I don't have a live website, but you can just send to my email, aem1957@sbcglobal.net. $30 at, I don't know, if you're in the U.S., $5 for shipping.
Shipping, yeah. You won't regret it.
I do PayPal as well to that email address.
In fact, I'm going to take a picture of the bottle and the stopper so you can kind of see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And when you go to the website, I recommend you take a look at this. If you have any interest at all, if you drink wine, and most of the people who listen to this podcast need to drink if you're listening to me. So anyhow, so you haven't been traveling a whole lot, but...
Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
I've been working on, I've got my new book literally just out 2 weeks ago. Is the Houdini Periodical Bibliography, references from 1898 to 2023. This is the third edition, Scott, and it's got over, if you're interested in research or you're looking for or wondering if a certain periodical, magazine, journal, newsletter, where would an article be?
Right.
This is from all over the world. There's over 68 countries. Houdini would be thrilled that he is still a readable interest all over the world in modern, all of our current countries. I mean, there's some stuff from Sri Lanka.
And all in their foreign languages, too.
India, yes. The Eastern European countries, even Russia. There was recently, a few years ago, a cover. He's on the cover of a Russian magazine.
Hmm.
So he'd be thrilled. Houdini would be thrilled.
So if you're needing to do any kind of research on Houdini at all, this would be something
this
you need to have.
This is a good starting place. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a good starting place. And hopefully, I tease that researchers in 100 years will thank me for laying the groundwork of, hey, where was that article from? Or where would I need, you know, what would I look for?
And it's a pretty hefty volume you got, though, there. It was about 200 pages or something?
It is. It's like 201. Good for you.
I'm good at estimating. I can estimate how many cards. And I'm going to guess your weight also. No. So
not that show.
Not that kind of show. It is, I was going to say, as far as I know, that the Conjuring Arts Center of Bill Kalush also is another good place to go
for
all kinds of stuff if you're wanting to do some research on that. But I know that whenever I'd visited your home on several occasions, and you have all of the, of course, everything, the Soudini, you're a major collector. And as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, but you pretty much, if the word has Houdini in the book or in the text, you buy the book.
To a certain extent. I mean, if a periodical or even a book, you know, if there's just a paragraph, something short, no, I have to discount that.
Okay.
And don't.
I wondered at what point you stop, you know.
And it is my, in fact, in this book, there's a paragraph I say, you have to allow for my self-imposed criteria.
Sure.
And prejudice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to either be the only known citation of, let's say, a certain event that it would be of interest. But that really doesn't happen very often. It really doesn't come up that way. I try to say at least a chapter in a book, or, you know, six pages of a book, are in a magazine, you know, at least six paragraphs, half page at least type article.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, there's so many magazines will list maybe 100 words to a brief article.
Yeah.
You know, our brief mention, and that it's just, I don't chase that.
Is there any place that someone can go also that, where there is a compendium Houdini's been on television, in the movies and on film of different kinds, whether, again, I say movies, I mean like television, made for TV movies or whatever.
Right.
Is there some place that somebody can go? Now, yours is all just for the written
literary.
Word.
Right.
Is there just something that's similar that people
can? John Cox's site, Wild About Houdini, would be a great online reference of, especially the Tony Curtis, you know, and any of the other,
the obvious ones, but
the other movies made for TV.
Yeah. But there are references. I mean, just like,
And it would reference that if you put in search for Houdini movies on like his site, and then Joe Notaro, who, I think it's, I'm going to miss this one for you, Scott. Something evidence, .com.
I remember, Joe, when we were doing the seance, the Houdini, the official Houdini seance.
Harry Houdini, circumstantial evidence.com.
Right.
And, now this site would certainly be very specific on the Houdini films, the Houdini acted films.
But it's not just films. What I'm saying is that I know there have been some things on television that have just been episodes of a series, like a detective series, and someone, you know, not only just mentions Houdini, I mean, again, it's not kind of like a book, but there'd be some little segment in which this guy, maybe as a magician, doing Houdini tricks in response to him.
John Cox's site would do that. I'd go back to that again.
It
would still be a great reference because John is so comprehensive.
And he'll be here tomorrow. He's going to be lecturing tomorrow, too.
Great.
Have a chance to visit with him.
Looking forward to that.
As always.
Everybody's looking
forward to that. Are you going to be doing anything special for Houdini's birthday for Halloween this year?
Well, typically I do join Bill Radner and for the Houdini seance that he does. And we don't know what city it's going to be in this year.
Okay.
But
we just talked about Joe Notaro. When we did this in Fort Worth, Joe was one of the guys who was part of the inner circle there.
Yes.
You're making a sale right now. How about that? There's a guy that's buying that for $30 right there. You got the brass one.
He already heard about the
already
podcast.
Heard this already.
We talked about that.
The gold one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Thank you.
That's a great one.
Welcome, man.
happy.
Making sales as we talk.
That's right.
Bring them in.
Hey, happy customer every time. You don't know where the official seance is going to be there this
year. It'll be a few months before
they announce it.
They let us know.
Yeah.
And there's about a dozen regulars.
Yeah.
And it's always fun.
I loved it when we did it from before. Oh, there's Bill Smith. I know we want to talk with him then briefly. I'm going to let you go. Thanks very much. It's always good to talk with you, Arthur.
Thank you,
Scott. Look forward to seeing you back home.
Great.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Arthur Moses. Scotty out. This afternoon, we had a couple of really great speakers, and one of which was, one of whom, I should say, was David Charvet. He's with me right now. Hey, David.
Hey, how are you, Scott? Good to see you.
Fantastic. It was a very interesting conversation each week, or each week, each year you put together something that's always just a great conversation. And this year happened to be about, just since we're here in Southern California, about the history of magic in Southern California.
What I call the golden age. And every year, you're right, I come up with something different, only because Bill Smith says, come up with something different that they haven't heard about. So it's my project for the year, or at least for a couple of months, where I sit down and I find some obscure subject that no one has talked about. And yes, since it was Southern California, here we are. Bill said, why don't you talk about the golden age of magic in Southern California?
And what years did it come?
Well, I cut it to yeah, only 70 years, 1893 to 1963, which basically brackets the era when Floyd Thayer of Thayer Magic came to California up to the time that the Magic Castle opened. So that's a big swath of time, and there's so much that happened. And I think people who don't live here, a lot of people don't understand how influential Southern California was in the world of magic and how it happened.
I think it is amazing about, like you were talking about, when LA first started with only 1,500 people, yep, or so here, mainly because there was no water. It was a desert out here.
That's right.
And eventually about how that it built up, and then they needed entertainment.
That's right. That's right. The Orpheum Theater was the first vaudeville theater, and there's been three Orpheum Theaters now in California. I've been lucky to stand on the stage of the last one, which was built in 1926. It's still there. But once the railroads came, every magician finally came to California. But people who lived here, like Harry Keller, who settled here after he retired, he never performed here during his career.
He just liked the area.
Well, yeah, because
kind of like Blackstone liked Colin. He decided this was.
And Blackstone lived here too at the end.
Dante
had a ranch out in Northridge. And yeah, so a lot of the pros, it was the weather. It was what attracts everybody to California is the weather.
Yeah.
And the celebrities. So there you go.
But I thought it was interesting also, as far as you giving us the history of Thayer and Owens and how that all transpired.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because Thayer, of course, came from Vermont. And we're talking early, 1891. I mean, the family came, he and his father came out from Vermont, opened a wood shop and started building novelties, not magic. But then they started building magic, and Floyd started building magic. And the Thayer magic, this great collectible magic we see now, was all created here in Los Angeles.
And then I'm glad you brought in a lot of women who were early pioneers, one of which I did not know, Del O'Dell had a magic shop. I'm probably the only one who didn't know that, but
well,
it was Abbott's, and go ahead.
Yeah, she took over the old Abbott's magic shop. It wasn't really that old. They built it and started it in the late 40s, and then she, in 53, she moved out from New York for the weather. And of course, because television had started too, she had her own TV show, but she bought the Abbott's magic shop, turned it into the Del O'Dell magic shop. And she was a promoter, great promoter. And if you haven't read the book that Michael Claxton wrote about Del O'Dell, she was an amazing, amazing woman.
I'm glad you also talked to Magic Gals, or talked about the Magic Gals, because I remember Irene Larson talking about that a long time ago, and it was, I guess, Jerry Larson that got that started.
She did. That's Bill and Milt Larson's mom, Jerry, and she started it, and Bess Houdini was one of the people who started it, because, of course, she lived here, too. So, I mean, all these threads come together and come to Southern California, and it all ended up leading to basically the Magic Castle in many ways.
It was interesting, as you were saying, that the guys were getting together apparently for a meeting, and then the girls were going in for sewing or whatever.
Yeah, a club called Los Magicos, which there were a lot of celebrities in that club, Orson Welles and Milton Berle and all these people who were members of this magic club. And then the wives would come and be there, kind of put up with the magic. And then one of the wives finally said, Lynn Miller was her name. She said, why don't we start a women's magic club? Boom. There you go. This is in 1939. So way ahead of the curve. And they were the competitions every year at the Pacific Coast Association of Magicians conventions. They had the Magic Gals competition. They picked the best lady magician in those days. And there were a lot of, you know, women who went on to successful careers as magicians in a day with a male dominated profession, and they made their way, and it was great.
And one of the last thing, and that was about Houdini coming out to visit. When you were talking about him, I was thinking you were going to say, I'm so inspired by the camaraderie of the club here. I think I want to start an organization, which became the SAM, but that's not exactly what.
No, the SAM started in 1902 and the Los Angeles Society of Musicians was in 1917. But Houdini was impressed by the camaraderie. I think it was the weather. Everybody liked the weather and everybody felt better when it's sunny outside. So Houdini loved LA. He lived here, of course, and worked here and made movies here. And it, you know, was a part of his life. And then I say after he passed away, Bess moved out and she lived here until she died in 1943. So the Houdinis really liked LA. And of course, everybody liked Bess and Harry both.
And for those who might be interested, as we kind of wrap up over here, more information, you put all of that talk into a booklet, which is available now.
Yes, I did.
And how can people get a hold of that?
Well, they can eventually. It will probably be on my website, charvetmagic.com, C-H-A-R-V-E-T magic. And appropriately enough, it's called The Golden Age of Magic in Southern California, 1893 to 1963. There we are.
And it's going to be for a low, low price of only...
Well, $15. Oh, I get the fast plug in there. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So people ought to check that out, because if you want to know a little bit more about the Golden Age of Magic, yep. And you believe now we're into a second age, Golden Age.
Well, I think it started with the Magic Castle, the second Golden Age. It really did. And you had Mark Wilson on television down here in the early 60s, the Magic Castle. And that led to all these renewed interest in magic, Doug Henning and the Magic Show, all of these things that grew basically out of this Magic Castle was the start of the second Golden Age.
Right, right. I think we are. Thanks, really. And then we got television that's going now, of course.
Exactly.
David Copperfield was doing so many specials, yep. And then Doug Henning. Or first, I said Doug, and then David, and then others with Chris Angel and others, and then Las Vegas, et cetera, et cetera.
And Gay Blackstone of Masters of Illusion now, which is shot right here in L.A. So there you go. It's still going on.
David, thank you very much for presenting that. Thank you for also giving us a little recap. That you.
Thank you, Scott. Always a pleasure to talk.
It's a pleasure to always hear you talk. You got such a great voice. I tell you.
I had nothing to do with it.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that's David Charvet, Scotty out. So this evening we had a couple of really excellent conversations or talks, I guess. One was with Don Greenberg, who was talking about his relationship and his family's relationship then with Del Rey. And then Stan Allen did a one-on-one with Chuck Jones. And I've got Chuck with me right now. Hello, Chuck.
Yeah. Hi there.
It was fantastic. Really interesting to hear a lot about your history and some things I didn't know about that as far as working malls and some of the things that you had done, of course, on television. What was your character on TV? You were a jester? A
court jester magician. But I didn't act like a court jester, you know, but that was the costume.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be at the Magic Castle. But not the Magic Castle,
yeah.
My Magic Castle. By the time I sold the show that I envisioned a year and a half before, I could no longer call it Magic Castle because the Hollywood Magic Castle opened with Milt. I never told Milt this story, by the way. Very funny.
He'd never heard it before he passed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the story. Some interesting things happened during the time I was doing that kids television show. I was up in my office in the studio one day, and a guy knocked at the door and came in. And he said, I'm going to be on a talk show tonight. It was Pamela Mason's talk show. And he said, I'm a magician. I just came in from Chicago. He said, can you tell me where the Magic Castle is? Which turns out the studio was on La Brea and the Magic Castle was one block over, mm-hmm. about a mile north and one block over. That person asking me where the Magic Castle was Al Goshman.
Oh, okay.
Who basically lived at the Magic Castle for the next 10 years, worked there, you know, night after night after night.
Well, how did he find you to ask you?
Well, he knew that I had the kid show.
Yeah.
And that I was a
magician.
So he
sent you out. Then, okay.
And this was the same studio that he was going to be interviewed at.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, of course.
Yeah. So kind of an interesting story.
Yeah.
So I introduced Al Goshman to the Magic Castle. Not that he didn't already know about it,
yeah.
But he didn't know how to get
where it was, yeah. Kind of pointed him in the right direction, right, I guess, so to speak. Well, a lot of the things that you have created and performed over the years and shows and things you've done, it's just amazing. And I know that congratulations on just celebrating your 60th anniversary with you and Jan.
Yeah.
That's great. And are you planning on taking any more tours? Are you going back? Are you going to be producing some for other magicians? Or what are you
thinking? I may do that. I've been doing consulting and helping to direct a show that do you remember the name Cramion?
Of course, I remember Sam Cramion.
Yeah. So his son has produced a magic show. What is the name? I'm trying to think of the name of it. Can't think of the name of it. And it involves song and dance and magic illusions. There's a little bit of a story, and there is a section that he wanted me to direct and teach the people how to do. He had a separate director for the singers and dancers and talk in between for the book part of the show. But so I consulted on that, and with AGT, a couple of performers that were on AGT 2 years ago and 3 years ago. So that kept me busy. And then I worked at Magic Castle, but in the smaller rooms,
right?
The parlor, and I used to do the full show in the bigger room.
The palace,
yeah, but not anymore.
Well, I think that it's great. Well,
I want to post. I want to sign him off here.
Let's see.
Okay, I have to take a break over here. Lance Burton's wanted to buy a poster over there from Chuck. Very difficult right now to get in to finish.
I got in this one. Yeah.
But anyhow, we're going to wrap up then and put this to bed. So this way you kind of can get an idea of what this was all like for this first and second day. And then we will present then the third and final day tomorrow. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Chuck Jones. This is Scotty out.